Have you ever thought how difficult it would be to catch a wild monkey? This is a normal Tuesday for me, but I don't know if you guys have ever actually considered the weight of this. Like, if you do you chase it? I mean, these monkeys are quick, they are agile, they are up in the trees. I don't think chasing it is even close to the way. Do you try to outsmart it? I mean, even if you, like, you tricked it for a second, once you get close, I mean, he's quick and agile and he's going back in the trees. How would you catch a monkey? You know, with a cracker is a very interesting response. With a banana? Okay. Yeah, what would you choose? Oh, banana. Well, I actually have an answer to this. Native tribes used to catch monkeys all the time. And unfortunately, it was for food, by the way. Native tribes would eat the monkeys. Anyways, we're going to pass that. Native tribes used to catch monkeys all the time. And they would do so by taking a coconut, hollowing it out, and filling it with rice and other delicacies that the monkey highly desired. And then they would attach it to the tree. They would like chain it to the tree so it couldn't leave. And they would leave it there. And here's what the monkey would do. The monkey would approach this coconut. He would stick his hand in this small little hole that they had made. He would grab the rice, and he couldn't pull out his hand because they had deliberately made the hole small enough that a flexible hand could fit through it, but not big enough that a closed fist could make it through. And what happens is that then as the native approaches the monkey refused to let go, and he would be caught. In short, the monkey went from getting his dinner to being someone else's dinner. And clearly, guys, in this fact, it wasn't the coconut that truly trapped the monkey. Like, the monkey could make his hand flexible again, pull it out, and run up in the trees and never be caught. The true trap was in the monkey's own mind. In the monkey's greed, the monkey's attachment to his physical possessions, the monkey's unwillingness to let go. And if we are not careful, church, we fall prey to the same trap. And so this morning and over the next several weeks, we are going to continue to talk about the obstacles that get in the way of us living how we want and ought to live. In addition, we are going to explore the ways that we can overcome. And it all starts with cleaning the lens. It starts with seeing ourselves and God rightly. And so as we said last week, a lens is something that bends light and focuses it for greater clarity. And so for our eyes, it keeps things from appearing blurry. And we're going to read it again. We read it last week. Matthew 6:22-23. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. It will be blurry. If then the light within you is dark, how great is that darkness? And so when we are cleaning the lens, when we are examining ourselves against sin, it becomes a battle of light and darkness, of clear and blurry. And so this series is going to progress through the 7 deadly sins. It's the 7 primary obstacles that get in the way of us living fully, seeing clearly, walking confidently, standing in God's presence, of being light. And here's the 7 again: pride, greed, envy, gluttony, wrath, lust, and sloth. And so last week we talked about pride, a cancerous and a foundational sin. And if you didn't get to catch it, if you weren't here, if you didn't get to watch it, I'd encourage you to go back. Because again, this is all about seeing ourselves clearly. And if this is such a foundational one and it has effects on all the rest of them, then go check the Facebook page or our webpage and maybe just go listen to it. Because we want to make sure that these sins come into focus in our lives. Because after all, this study is about the sins that derail us and the virtues that make us. The sins that take us off track and then the virtues that put us back on track. So this week, we are cleaning the lens to better see greed. No special offering after. Is that safe to say? No special offering. We did it on purpose, normal. We didn't want to, this is not about me getting your money. Please take that wall down. That's not my desire in this at all. Again, it's all about the heart. I don't care about the finances. It's all about the heart. And if I'm being honest with you, before we even get into it, I said it with pride, and I have to say it with this one too. Greed is a struggle for me. I'm speaking out of a deficit, not out of a perfection. Because greed is one of those things that you don't really present all the time. Like, it's not something where you would look at me and you're like, yeah, he's a greedy person. But I struggle to let go, the same way the monkey does. Webster's Dictionary defines greed as a selfish or excessive desire for more of something than is needed. And this can be summarized to a short statement. It's never going to be enough. I think of, this is me, because I actually like musicals, but I think of Hamilton. There's a constant theme. He's never going to be satisfied. Or I think of The Greatest Showman. He goes from nothing to something, and then there's this song in the middle of it, it's never enough. And that was actually the point where he ended up stumbling. He ended up trying to achieve too much. Ambition took him too far. And this idea is whatever you have is insufficient. It's not enough, comparable to what you could have. And as a result, what we do is we envy and we collect and we hoard. And like all sin, greed is a matter of the heart. And so someone's not necessarily greedy because they collect something, right? Like if you collect Hot Wheels or antique glass or stamps, by all means, go for it. But it's a matter of the heart. Because you need to be wary that whatever it is a hobby, not an obsession. Whatever it is a gift from God for you to enjoy, not an uncontrollable desire to be filled or satiated. Greed is a matter of yearning for things in a way that want becomes a need. If you want the simplest definition, it's right here. Greed is a matter of yearning, of desiring, of wanting something in a way that want becomes need. And so every sin that we will cover will have ties back to the original sin in some facet. So let's look at Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve in Genesis 3, they had every animal, every herb, every bit of flowing water, every tree, except for one tree. That's their only boundary. One singular tree was forbidden. And in the end, they decided that they could not live within that boundary given. And here's how I see their minds working. No, it's not said deliberately in Scripture, but here's how I see their minds working. We have, it's like Adam and Eve having a conversation. We have all these trees, that there is one we do not possess and need to. We need to. And in that lack of contentment, lack of trust in God, and greedy desire, that they disobeyed. And they sought for themselves the next thing. And like Adam and Eve, greed can blind us to our spiritual state. It blinds us in general, but it can blind us to our spiritual state. So if we ask the question, how does greed derail our lives? It blinds us. It blinds us. It makes our vision blurry, our eyes dark, our hearts selfish. And as a result, God and others tend to become tools to get what I want. We become blind in that way. So let me ask a really difficult question. Are we as excited about the things of God, about serving others, as we are about the Amazon box that appeared at our front door? Listen, church, I love a good Amazon box. I do. I get excited. I don't even remember what I ordered because I have such short-term memory like a goldfish. And I get there and I open it up and I'm excited. But is my life about those moments of getting those Amazon boxes, or is it about the things of the Lord? Because if it's about those moments, then I may have blurrier vision than I even know. Jesus has a story in Luke 12. It's starting in verse 13 that we'll start to help us illustrate this principle, that greed can blind us to our spiritual state. Let's read together. Someone from the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Short of this, real quick, is that the man wants money. That's the short of it. In this time, the eldest son got a double portion of the inheritance. So what that means is if it is me and my brother, and there's only two of us, and he is the older child, when my parents pass away, there will be three portions of the money divided out, and he's going to get 2/3 and I'm going to get 1/3. So if it's 90,000, he's getting 60,000, I'm getting 30,000. And that's just how they did it, and that's how it was done in that day and age. And so this man is coming saying, I got my 30,000, but I want more of the money. And he's coming because he's unsatisfied with what he has, what he was given, and he craves more. And so here's Jesus' response. Friend, he said to him, who appointed me a judge or arbiter over you? He then told them, watch out and be on guard against all greed, because one's life is not in the abundance of his possessions. So that's the simple teaching. Here's the simple lesson from Jesus. But Jesus has this thing that he likes to do. He likes to give a lesson, and then he likes to make it understandable for everybody through his famous parables, right? And so he's going to illustrate it for everybody, this whole crowd that is gathered around now. He told them a parable. A rich man's land was very productive. He thought to himself, what should I do since I don't have anywhere to store my crops? I will do this, he said. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones and store all my grain and my goods there. And I'm like, yeah, smart plan. It's a good plan. Frugal. Good plan. Then I'll say to myself, you have many goods stored up for many years. Take it easy. Eat, drink, enjoy yourself. And I look at him and I'm saying, yeah, he's living the dream. This is the dream that we have. It's to store and collect enough for ourselves that we could simply sit back and relax. And here's Jesus' response. But God said to him, you fool. This night your very life is demanded of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? Your possessions do not matter when your life comes to a close. Whatever treasure you have stored up in these big barns for yourself on this earth will not matter when your life comes to a close. So why do you live with the sole purpose of being comfortable? Sounds like Ecclesiastes, if you ask me, if you've been there for that series. That's how it will be with the one who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. And he concludes this parable right here for these two men. But Jesus is not done teaching, because these two men needed a lesson. But he has an inner circle of disciples, right? So now he needs to tell his disciples what it means to be rich toward God. And he continues. He said to his disciples, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. And we're going to skip down to verse 31. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be provided for you. Don't be afraid, little flock, because your Father delights to give you the kingdom. That's what it means to be rich toward God. That's it. To be rich toward God is to seek his kingdom. It is to serve others, to be selfless with your life, which means that those in legitimate poverty, those who do not have water within an hour walk, those who have no place to lay their head, this is the most incredible gospel presentation to them. That if they are in poverty in this economy, they can be ridiculously wealthy in the economy of heaven. Ridiculously wealthy by simply being rich toward God, by finding him and life in him. And this is why we should rejoice in the upside down kingdom, because that means that this is not all it. I mean, let's take the opposite. If there was no heaven and no hell, then yes, by all means. I hope we would all do everything we can to get rich. We would enjoy every simple luxury we get. You know, buy the hot tub. Lay in it for hours. Do whatever you want that makes you happy, because once it's over, it's over. But that's not the gospel. Here's our treasure. It's Christ crucified. That's our treasure. And so when we store up that, that makes us rich in the economy of heaven. And so Jesus' advice to his disciples as a result of this is, sell your possessions and give to the poor. Make money bags for yourselves that won't grow old, an inexhaustible treasure in heaven where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. which begs two questions. I won't skip over, which begs two questions. Do I need to have nothing in order to be a Christian? I mean, he just told me, sell my possessions. So is money bad? Is it evil? Do I need to, can I have nothing? 1 Timothy 6:10 says, "For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." And it doesn't say here, money is a root of all kinds of evil. It says the love, the excessive desire for money is the root of all kinds of evil. So to answer this question in simple terms, no. No, you do not have to give away everything and make yourself absolutely the lowest of the lows. You cannot own a single grain of rice or else you're doing wrong. That's not this presentation. Money is neither good nor bad. It's a hard statement to say, but money is neither good nor bad. Again, it's the matter of the heart. Money gives you an opportunity to corrupt yourself. So how do you desire it and how do you use it? That's the measure. Which leads to the second question. Where is my worship? Where is my worship? He says at the very end, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So where is your treasure? I heard a preacher recently say, "Show me your credit card statement, I'll tell you what you love." And I was immediately like, that's a tense statement. I'll never say that from a stage. And then I laughed to myself on a different thing. Elizabeth and I, if you looked at our credit card statement, you'd find out that we really like Buffalo Wild Wings on Thursday nights for BOGO boneless wings. I think that might be my treasure. But seriously, the principle is true. Even though that statement is ridiculously tense, the principle is true. We allocate time, money, resources for things that we think are important to us. We will. Even if you say, man, we're really tight on our finances right now, you'll still allocate whatever you need to the things that are most important to you. And so is money allocated to serving others? And again, let me give you another reminder. Not my best principle. This is not my best sin-virtue pairing. I have a lot of work on this. And this is also not about me wanting to dig into your lives. I just believe that in order for me to be faithful from this stage, I have to ask hard questions for your reflection. So is self or maybe luxuries more of an idol than you first thought? Just as every sin can be seen in the initial sin with Adam and Eve, every virtue that we talk about, or every opposite of the sin, can be seen in Jesus. I don't even have to pull up a crazy story. Jesus came to this earth, and I don't think once I saw him accumulate a lot. And in fact, at one point he asks, "Hey, how much food do we have? There's 5,000 people here. How much food do we have?" Oh, that small amount? It wasn't like he stored up so that he could feed the 5,000 crowd. He didn't plan that ahead of time so that, he had a couple barns set aside full of a bunch of food. So whenever this comes up, he can feed it. And there's the miracle right there is that they had enough. Instead, the miracle is that they didn't and God multiplied it. Jesus had flexible hands. He came and whatever was put in his hands, man, he was faithful with it. Whatever was taken, he praised God for it. Open hands. See, a lot of people in this society, a lot of us, if we're being honest, think that money is freedom. When I finally get enough, I will be free to do all the things I want to do. That's the thought. But in actuality, a lot of money is slavery if you can't let go of it. I mean, think of the monkeys trying to get their food. Totally fine going in, totally fine going out. Use it as you can, but the moment that you get that closed fist and you can't let go, man, you are put in slavery. Because food is good for the monkeys, but it became deadly when they could not let go of the surplus. So if greed derails us and it causes slavery, then what is the cure? What's our virtue? What makes us? It's generosity. You probably could have predicted it, but it's generosity. And again, no special offering. I say generosity, no special offering. Generosity comes from the mindset that we are stewards, not owners. We are managers, not owners, if you want to think in business terms, right? We are managers. That everything in our possession, and I mean everything in our possession, is simply on loan. That the house or apartment that we have, the car that we drive, the clothes that we wear, the spouse that we may or may not have, the kids that we may or may not have, the body that we walk around with, the breath that we just took as I've been speaking in this very moment, all of it is on loan. Because the creator of the entire universe, the one that fashioned every single intricate thing, allowed us to steward these things, to be fruitful and multiply, to show dominion over the earth. He gave us the ability to steward what he has created. And one of the hardest things, one of the saddest things about greed, maybe even one of the things that we don't realize, is that greed robs God. Greed robs God of being Jehovah Jireh. It robs God of being provider in my life. Because if I think I own and I deserve everything, then how can I see him as a provider? He didn't provide anything because I own it. I deserved it. And we rob God, which means that greed is not only personally toxic, but it is also spiritually and relationally toxic. And that's why we must see this sin rightly. It's why we must practice its opposite virtue, generosity. And so how do we actually achieve generosity? Do we actually achieve it? Paul gives Timothy some advice in 1 Timothy 6, 17 through 19. This is just a couple of verses later from when he says, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. So 1 Timothy 6, 17 through 19 says, command those who are rich. Real quick, pause. Rich, even if you do not feel rich in this culture or society, you're not exempt from this instruction. This is still for you and me. Let's resume. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant nor to put their hope in wealth or the hope of wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation in the coming age, so they may take hold of life that is truly life. What a statement. Man, that they may take hold of life that is truly life. That means that the life that we think we live if we're not doing this is actually partially an illusion. The control we think we have is actually an illusion. Real life is the life modeled by Jesus. And so we need to see ourselves as stewards. And even if we have a smaller amount to manage than others, no matter where you are on that, no matter if you are feeling real poor or you are Jeff Bezos, the calling is the exact same. That we are meant to manage well. We are meant to steward well what we have been entrusted with. And with money and with time is money, right? With time, perform acts of selflessness and generosity, doing good deeds, being willing to share, as Paul said to Timothy. Those are the ways to lay up eternal treasures. In this, I think about one of my mentors. One of my mentors, he and his wife have been in the same house for a while, like 25 years. And it's no extravagant mansion. It's nothing crazy. It's just a good, solid house. And they decided early on that even though they can't support every single missionary that asks for money or every single organization or every single nonprofit like they would love to do, even though that's not something that maybe they're able to do, they decided early on that they have a house that God blessed them with, and with that they can be generous. And so in all the time I've known them, there have been very few seasons where somebody was not staying in their house that was not their family. They had a friend that ended up moving there and got a job in that area. And they stayed with them for 9 months, just trying to find permanent housing, getting their feet under them. They've had missionaries stay for a week or a couple weeks. They've hosted different people because they decided that one of the ways they can be generous is to just host. Give food that they have in their kitchen. Give a room, a spare room in their house, even though they have four boys. So it is a hectic house already. God blessed them with the house, and so they wanted to steward the house well. Generosity can involve money, it can involve time, it can involve so much. At the end of the day, it involves your heart being into it, because a true heart is stewardship. And so this week, the challenge is twofold. We did a challenge last week, and I think we continue it. The challenge is twofold. Number one, we need to reflect. Reflection is the heart of what we're doing here, seeing ourselves clearly. Reflect. See what possessions in your life have slowly transitioned from a want to a need. See what possessions have slowly transitioned from a want to a need. What things can you honestly not live without? If I had it with me, I'd show you, but our phone? That's a hard one. But our phone, like if you asked me, my phone is one of those things. Like, and it's not just the phone. Like, the phone is hard for me because it goes everywhere I go. I mean, it's in my bag right now. The only reason I don't have it is because if a notification comes on, I'll be distracted because I'm ADHD, and it'll be like, oh, I wonder who's. But the phone, like, even if you challenged me to carry a flip phone, I would still struggle because I've gotten so used to all the things my phone could do. Even if you asked me to get rid of Safari on my smartphone, I'd still struggle because I'd be out at some coffee shop, somebody would mention a movie, and I'd think to myself, what was that actor? And then I wouldn't have anything to search it. We've become so ingrained where the phone is, it's a need. It's a need. It is hard to go without it. Communication is a need, right? And it's probably more of a necessity than it should be. But that's only one example. Check your life. What things have slowly transitioned from a want to a need? And number two, practice. Actively look for an opportunity to be a good steward of what has been entrusted to you. I leave it broad for that reason. But it could look like something, you know, of I see somebody down at a coffee shop, I buy them a coffee. Or maybe I don't see them at all and I just buy them a coffee anyways. Bless their day. It could be God putting an organization on your heart and you go support them, whether it's financially or with your time. You go volunteer. Look for ways to give of yourself. The opportunities present themselves all the time, and it's in those moments where we have the opportunity to be generous that we get to answer the question, where does our treasure actually lie? So we've gone through pride last week, and we've gone through greed today. The question I would ask is, as we go into prayer, is, are you only reflecting on it in this moment? It's really easy to come into a Sunday service. I know because I've been in Sunday services throughout my life. It's really easy to come into a Sunday service, hear something that is like, okay, that motivates me to do something. And then, you know, I just walk away and I go home and that's it. I don't think about it anymore. Maybe one time when I got greedy, I'm like, oh yeah, I probably should have done better. But just as we entered this sermon, I want to exit. Search my heart, O God. If that could be our prayer, test me and try my thoughts. If that could be our prayer, I wonder how much of these sins, how much of this deep embedded root we would actually find. So that's, I mean, I gave you two challenges, and both of them are numbered one, as I just realized. So maybe I gave you one challenge in two portions. Either way, Search me and try my heart. Try my thoughts. Pray with me if you will.